Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'll keep to the spaghetti.
Yeah.
And a big meatball.
Next,
can I say that?
A big meatball. We're going to talk about this.
Is that considered bad now?
We're going
to spaghetti and a big meatball.
I think that's offensive to our
to
you
who?
Know,
not the know. Irish and the Italians.
I'm the parent of a part Italian child, yeah. I can forget about it.
But,
I don't know if we're supposed to.
You know what
do
I heard
anymore.
Today? Something like somebody went into space that's like pot Indian or Indian or something. And I'm like, why don't we hear like it was the 1,000th person in space that was Irish? You don't hear that anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's not considered a thing?
Yeah, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
It's but just it was like, literally like the sixth, or like Shatner.
Shatner was the 600th. He made it under 600th in space or something. I'm like, who cares? Like, it's just a person. Who cares? I mean, really, are we rooting on like the, everybody's a mutt now, aren't they?
Well,
who are the purebreds out there? Are there many?
Well, if you're sending Shatner to space, people care because it's Shatner, you know, and it's like, he's got a call. It's like if you sent Dolly Parton to space, that'll be next.
Yeah.
You know, like either Bezos or Musk is going to have to send Dolly to space.
Sure, why not? She'll float.
And then it'll be Kardashians in space.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, whoever you can get.
They've been on a few rocket ships, I'll tell you that.
I know. Whoever you can get to generate some publicity. And,
yeah.
You know.
I didn't mean to throw you off with that Halloween 3. Sorry about that.
You threw me off with that.
The silver shamrock.
The song.
It's the best. Oh, come on. That's my favorite Halloween movie. Nancy Allen. We'll talk about that in a moment. Let's hear some new releases. What do you got for us with 5K, 4K?
I can't
Blu-ray,
go on. I can't go on.
A strangled friend Blu-ray.
You played that damn music and it stuck in my head again. And
I like to throw people off sometimes. I like to keep people on edge.
So it's Halloween, and this, of course, is, horror movie release time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff coming out on 4K that's Steelbook, re-release, stuff like that. There are a couple of new things coming out this week.
Like what?
And both of these discs are the same story. And I'm going to recommend one of them to you, and I'm going to tell you to skip the other one.
These are both horror movies.
These are both horror movies.
Okay.
So this week, we have the Criterion Collection releasing Night of the Living Dead in 4K.
That's cool.
And we have Shout Factory.
Yes, they're always good.
Their stuff is always great.
Yeah.
It's Shout Factory, you get top-notch discs.
Extras and discs, yeah. Extras.
Releasing Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness in 4K.
Which is fair at best.
Now, out of these two films, which Chris Earle do you think I would recommend that you buy?
Oh, Night of the Living Dead.
Incorrect.
Incorrect?
Incorrect.
Really?
Incorrect.
Why?
Because it is. So here's what's common between both of these.
Yeah.
In both cases, there are no new supplements, no new extras.
Yeah.
Really no new anything. Okay? There is a 4K disc that has been added to a Blu-ray package.
Okay.
And in both cases, you're going to spend about $9 to get the 4K disc along with added on.
I spent $53 for my Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
So if you spent 30
figures.
So if you spent $30 on Army of Darkness Blu-ray 3 disc set, it's $40 for the Army of Darkness 4 disc 4K set.
Yeah, why not get that?
Which is a Blu-ray set with the 4K disc thrown in. If you don't already own it, that's a great deal. Go get it. But if you're a fan, and that's really who these movies are aimed at, the Criterion disc is a problem. And here's why. You don't need black and white movies in 4K. You can get all of the resolution of a 4K scan for a black and white film, particularly one shot on
16 millimeter.
It was actually shot in 35.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Shot in grainy 35, black and white. You can get all that on a Blu-ray disc.
Yeah.
I own the Criterion Blu-ray release of Night of the Living Dead.
All right.
It is spectacular. It is a reference quality disc. It is one of the best black and white Blu-rays that's out there.
Yeah.
The 4K disc that they've added into this, I cannot believe is any kind of an improvement. Now, full disclosure, I have not seen it, okay? But I can tell you this. There is no HDR on this disc. It is the same 4K transfer that they used on the Blu-ray a couple of years ago, now presented in full 4K. Is there a little bit of extra resolution there? Yeah, there probably is. If you own a 70-inch top-of-the-line organic LED TV, or you own a top-of-the-line digital projector.
Give me the address. I want it.
And you got a silver screen, and you got the whole light dimming setup and all the rest of that.
Yep.
Maybe you're going to see a difference in this. If you're watching it on a backlit LED like the vast majority of us are,
yeah,
there is no reason for you to upgrade this.
Or are you watching it stirring some pasta and meatballs like I do in kitchen?
Black and white doesn't gain anything from 4K.
Yeah.
If you have a good black and white Blu-ray release,
yeah,
you don't get anything from upgrading to 4K.
You want to hear something funny? That Night of the Living Dead, my copy is from a magazine called Total Film. It only lasted a couple of years, and I got a free copy of Night of the Living Dead in the first issue. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah, because Romero let the copyright expire, and anybody can make it.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
I will say that the Criterion Blu-ray of Night of the Living Dead, or get the 4K if for some reason you don't own it, is brilliant. It is the most comprehensive release that has ever been done.
Yeah.
It is a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic disc that belongs in everybody's collection. With that, if you have a physical media collection and you collect movies, you need that Criterion Blu-ray. I just don't think, if you already own it, you're going to get anything worthwhile out of owning the 4K edition of this. Black and white, just you don't get anything from it. Comprehensive extras. George Romero himself actually oversaw the restoration of the film. It was one of the last things he did before he died.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I don't see a reason to buy it. Army of Darkness, color movie, has HDR on it. You're going to get a noticeable increase in picture quality from that.
All right.
I don't particularly like this movie that much.
Yeah, it's fair at best.
I think Evil Dead is way better, and I think this is kind of unfiltered Sam Raimi,
However, it's got those Ray Harryhausen skeletons in it, right? That pretty interesting all the skeletons moving around. I haven't seen it in a while.
You know, one of the things...
I got it on DVD, and I like it.
One of the things that's interesting to me about Army of Darkness is if you watch Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy,
sure,
and in particular you watch the Battle of Helm's Deep and the Return of the King,
yeah,
it's very clear that he's borrowing stuff from Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
That he's seen that film, that he loves that film, and that he wants to bring some of the sensibility of that film to what he's doing. It's a fun film if you're into it. It's not really a horror movie so much as it's an action comedy.
Yeah.
The Shout Factory package, as usual, is impeccable. There are actually 5 cuts of the film across 4 discs. The only one you get in 4K is the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
And again, I look at this and I'm like, couldn't you have done branching chapters and gotten more in there? The only one you get in 4K is the theatrical cut.
Mm-hmm.
You get the theatrical cut. You get the director's cut. You get the international cut.
Wow.
What's the fourth? You get the Universal happy ending version.
The big and cut.
Yeah. You remember the Universal theatrical version where everything ends well for Ash?
Yeah. Yeah. It was an alternate ending, right?
Well, it was the one Universal wanted. Sam Raimi's ending is the one where he wakes up in the future.
Sure.
So you get the dark
ending. And he screams. Yep. The dark ending. Yeah. Yep.
But you also
Spoiler alert.
You also get the TV cut of the movie with the additional footage in standard definition.
Interesting.
So Shout Factory doesn't list that as a separate cut of the film because it's not at the same quality as the Blu-ray versions. But I'll call that a separate cut of the film all day long because it is. So you're actually getting 5 cuts of the film. I think that's terrific value.
Yeah.
If you own it, and if you're a fan, you own it, There's a reason to upgrade to the 4K.
And I think there's more fans of this movie than ever now after Ash vs. Evil Dead, the TV series.
You're going to get better picture quality out of this.
Yeah.
And a lot of this was shot at night. A lot of it's dark and atmospheric and moody. So 4K is going to help with that. The other thing that's cool about this release is there is a lossless 5.1 and 2.0 soundtrack on it. So the soundtrack is going to be better than it's ever been before. Raimi does great sound design. It's a disc worth owning. If I'm going to upgrade either one of these two discs that's coming out this week, it's going to be Army of Darkness. I may just go home and throw in my Criterion Night of the Living Dead because that disc and that package is that good.
Wow. All right.
But I'm perfectly happy with it. I don't need the 4K of that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I like Evil Dead. I think Evil Dead 2, obviously, is the best of the three. And like you said, you know, and I've said it before, Evil Dead is pretty much the same movie. Evil Dead 2 is just a bigger budget.
Yeah.
And And 3 was good, but it was more of a sci-fi movie than a horror movie. There's nothing really that scary in Army of Darkness. I think there's plenty that's scary in Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. And also, just as an aside, Ash vs. Evil Dead on TV, the remake of Evil Dead is good. Have you ever seen that? It's good. It's dark.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's great. Good horror movie. I enjoyed it.
The original Evil Dead is one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
Yeah.
Because it's just 90 minutes of madness.
Yeah.
That completely changed the industry and changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
Raimi had very obviously been watching what the Italians were doing at the time that he made that movie, because you see a lot of that influence in there.
Yeah.
Every movie that's been, pretty much every horror movie that's been made since then has some element of Evil Dead kind of baked into it. Evil Dead 2, as a remake, is fun. It's not as rough or as raw as the original.
Mm-hmm.
And the original has its flaws, but it's still the best thing that Raimi ever made.
Yeah. I don't know. Those Spider-Man movies are pretty damn good. Quick and the Dead, great movie.
Spider-Man 2, yep. I think is good, but it's not game-changing in the way that Evil Dead 2 is, or the original Evil Dead is game-changing.
Yeah.
One of the things that
I think he ups his game, though, in Evil Dead 2 with all the camera work and all the weird moving of all the zombies and Ash and everything.
He's got a budget.
Yeah.
But at the same time that he's doing all of those fun things with the effects and the camera movements,
yeah,
he's not trying to make the most out of what he has available to him.
Yeah.
And in the first film, it's very clear that he's going to get as much as he possibly can out of every second of film that he's shooting. Whereas in Evil Dead 2, it's like, let's do a setup. Let's play around with things. Let's let this run longer.
Yeah.
It doesn't work as well as the first one.
You know what's awesome, though, too? Drag Me to Hell. You ever see that?
I've seen Drag Me to Hell. It's great. Good. It's good. Yeah. It's Sam Raimi going back to his roots, which is fun.
Yeah.
And I'd put that up there. The thing I like about Spider-Man 2 is there are horror movie elements throughout his Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
Like, when he does action sequences, he throws jump scares into them, and he throws, like, horror movie reaction shots into them.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why his action movies are so unique.
Yeah.
Because nobody else... Villeneuve did that in Sicario,
mm-hmm,
but nobody
mm-hmm
else really does that. And he did some of the same things in the Doctor Strange movie. Unfortunately, the Doctor Strange movie was just a giant mess.
Yeah, I didn't see it yet. Here's another little fun fact. The Coen brothers worked with Sam Raimi on Evil Dead. Did you know that?
Yes.
He was an editor.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of them was one of the editors for Evil Dead.
It's because Sam Raimi was this, like, earnest young kid.
Yeah.
I think he'd interned with the Coens.
Mm-hmm.
There was some history between him and the Coens. He'd been an assistant editor for one of them, or had been a PA or worked on one of their films. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm shooting this thing. And they were like, we'll help you.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
So that's a little something that's happening this week. We got the Army of Darkness, and we also have Night of the Living Dead. And Derek's pick is for Army of Darkness, and Night of the Living Dead can stay on the shelf, go to the bargain bin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw, let me tell you about Candyman remake. Did you see this?
I saw the original Candyman.
All right. Let's talk about the original Candyman for a minute here. I never saw it until about a year ago. And it was one of those few horror movies that I hadn't seen for the longest time. I don't know why, but I like Clive Barker. I always thought it was a little too much. You know, like Hellraiser, I love. Hellraiser 2, even better. Very gory. I'm a horror fan, but I'm not a huge gore guy. And Candyman, I found interesting. I thought it was inventive, but I didn't think it was all that scary. I thought it had some fun stuff, and I thought Virginia Madsen was great in it. And I thought Tony Todd did a great job as the Candyman. He's awesome.
Tony Todd's great in that movie.
And they take it and they throw it out the window and make it extremely woke. And basically a reckoning for white people everywhere.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's wild.
What?
It's wild.
Who's that for?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. And I was actually saying to my friend that I was watching it with, my buddy Darren, I'm like, I wish I knew a few more black friends that saw this movie that actually could tell me what they think of this movie, because and if they're fans of the original Candyman,
it's
a great looking movie. There's a lot of style to it. There was obviously a big budget, but they make it so woke, and then they make it such forced reckoning at the end. I'm like, what is this? You know, it's just bizarre to me. It's like, it's very angry for no reason to be angry. It's not a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a horror movie.
Is Tony Todd back as Candyman?
I can spoil it. Do you want me to?
I just want to know if Tony Todd's
He does show up.
Okay.
Yeah, but he shows up at the very end in a cameo.
Yeah.
And what it is basically there has been many Candymen over the years, and they are all people who have been hurt in the wrong way.
Sure.
And they've been, and it's basically, the scene at the beginning is right out of George Floyd. It's basically saying that this is what happened. And in the original Candyman, in the 1992 film, I don't specifically remember that. I remember a mob killing him but I don't specifically remember it being police.
It's not. In the original Candyman, he's a slave.
Right.
And he's beaten to death by a mob because he has a relationship with the plantation owner's daughter.
Yes.
And so it's and has a baby with her, so it's got that forbidden, and they kill her and they kill the baby as well.
Right.
So it's got those elements to it.
And those are very dark Clive Barker story elements.
And the way that it was done in the original film, because as Candyman went on, they leaned more and more into that mythology, which was fine, but they also made it more and more supernatural. Clive Barker's original film is basically an urban myth story.
Yeah.
And it's drawing a parallel between the way that black people were treated in slavery and the way black people are treated in modern Chicago.
Yes.
Because it's set in Cabrini Green.
Yeah. And Chicago looks beautiful in this remake. Looks great.
It doesn't in the original film because it's set in Cabrini Green.
Right.
And they make a point of illustrating the defects of Cabrini Green. And the way, because in the original movie, there's a series of murders that are happening.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, it's Candyman, you know, and it's this like hoodoo, you know, voodoo thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, nobody's taking seriously. And so the investigator is trying to figure out, like, you know, is there some way that someone's getting into these apartments and killing people?
Right.
And what she's discovering is that these apartments are terribly made. The people are living in horrible conditions.
Right.
And everybody's fed up with everybody else because they're living in these horrible conditions. And it's an indictment of what black society has been forced to live with.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah.
It's as effective a film to illustrate institutional racism and problems in society as anything that you're going to find.
Yeah, it had a lot of great ideas there, and it kept a lot open for discussion afterwards.
And you don't
see those in a horror movie. And it is a horror movie, the original one.
Why do you need to dial that up into some 21st century sense of grievance?
Can I tell you what the original choices of the Candyman and the Virginia Madsen role were? It was Eddie Murphy and Sandra Bullock.
Oof.
Do you think it would have made any sequels? It would have been a comedy. It's like, all I could picture is Eddie Murphy yelling, candy, like ice cream.
Candy man.
But one of the things that's great is Tony Todd there. He's a tall dude. He's slender, right?
Yeah.
He's got that deep, like Harvey Firestein voice, you know, but it's like, it's smooth and it's sexy, you know, it's like, this is a creepy dude. But also I can understand the whole thing of it's he's black. So it's different for a horror movie to actually have, you know, the villain, the evil monster be this, the Candyman here.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. But the way that it is in this new film, and it came out last year in 2021. It's just like, wow, this is it. Like, it has the ideas there, but it doesn't really explain a whole lot. And it's there's a lot that's just kind of in your face. And I'm going to say no, don't watch this movie.
Yeah.
I know plenty of people have, but I didn't like it. It's not a horror movie.
Whenever you tell me that something is that woke and that ridiculous, I have to watch it just to see for myself how bad it is.
Yeah. And count how many white people are killed in it versus black people.
Yeah.
There's one person that's black that gets killed, and it's because he's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's...
It's all white people that get killed in it.
Sure.
I'm like, what is this?
I'm fine with that. That to me isn't an issue one way or the other.
It's a reckoning.
Know? It's, well... You know, the cliche is that the black person is always the first one to die.
Sure.
You know, in the horror movie.
Sure, sure. Okay.
Either that or they're...
Or the whores, you know, the guys and the girls that have sex, right, in the horror
exactly.
movie.
Exactly. They're the first ones to go. It's like,
The black sidekick. That's what it was always used for. Right. I understand that.
And it got to be a running joke.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, by the late 1990s and the early 2000s, the black people are the jumpy ones telling everybody that, hey, something bad's going on. And they survive like a little later in the film and then get killed.
But I go back, and this isn't a horror movie, but go back to Boomerang with Eddie Murphy. Everybody was black in Boomerang. And I'm like, this is pretty cool, you know, how he did this. But it wasn't like a huge in your face, but it was still a very good statement. And it wasn't a great movie, but it was cool.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like it was refreshing to see something like that at the time. And that was back in the 90s. For 2021 to act like this hasn't been happening in 30 years is weird to me.
See,
it's just weird.
I'm not crazy about Candyman necessarily as a horror movie because I don't think it's necessarily it was sold as a horror movie.
I guess there's the political part of it.
It's a horror movie in the sense that Silence of the Lambs is a horror movie.
I would say that that's a horror movie.
I don't consider Silence of the Lambs a horror movie. Silence of the Lambs is a procedural. And it's a procedural that's got horror elements to it.
Yeah. But no, I would consider that a horror movie.
There's only one gory scene in the whole film.
Oh, he's creepy as hell in the whole thing.
But
Buffalo Bill, too. I mean, he's creepy as hell with Precious and skinning all the people alive.
But that's, you know...
That's everyday horror stuff. That's like, gets under people's skin.
But
there's people that exist out there like that.
But it's not horror in the same sense that A Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th movie is.
Oh, of course, yeah. That's in your face horror.
We've come here to see people bleed. We've come here to see teenagers get off.
Sure, but would you also say that Silence of the Lambs was the first horror movie that won Best Picture? Or was it a thriller that won?
They call it a thriller, and I think a thriller is a better way to describe it.
Yeah. Has a horror movie ever won?
No.
Yeah.
No horror movie has ever won.
That's as close as you're ever going to get. And it has to be a serial killer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we didn't bring this up. Shape of Water, which is the director from Antlers.
Sure.
And Pan's Labyrinth.
Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. So that movie wins Best Picture. That was an odd movie. I would not consider that a horror movie. I would not. That was just an odd piece of work.
I
didn't really like it. I'd give Antlers more of a thumbs up than Shape of Water, but that had that fish man, and she's making out with a fish man. They're going to have a fish baby.
Yeah,
it was like basically everybody wants to screw Jason Momoa as Aquaman. That's what that movie was.
Sort of exists outside of genre. It's science fiction more than anything else.
Yeah.
But the thing about Shape of Water and the reason it wins the Oscar is because of the craftsmanship behind it. It is a beautifully made movie.
Yeah.
It pays homage not just to the silent era, but also to the B-movie era.
Mm.
And it sort of wears all of its Hollywood influence on its sleeve.
Mm.
And that's the sort of thing that the industry looks at and says, look, somebody gets it. Oh, we love you so much for celebrating us. And they throw it a bunch of awards.
Yeah.
I will say that out of the films that have won Best Picture in recent years, it's probably the most entertaining.
You think so?
Yeah. I think it's the one that probably stands up best as a movie. I personally liked Chloe Zhao's film Nomadland, but
that was all right.
Not for the film that it is. So
I
want
to see Frances McDormand do it in a bucket.
Yeah. She's in it. You're going to win Best Picture.
Yeah,
she put her in a horror movie.
She is a horror movie. Oh my God. Who's she married to? Joel, right?
One of the Coens.
Yeah, she's married to Joel. He was looking at her like, oh my God, I can't get rid of this woman. She's his horror movie. It's like, because now that they're both big superstars, you know they haven't slept in the same bed in 30 years.
Oh, I think they're still deeply in love with each other.
Oh, my God.
I think they're mad about each other.
No, I think she's in love with herself, and he just doesn't know what to do.
I think it's...
He's a broken man. I look at that man, and he's a broken man. No. That's why he's making movies all the time. He wants to be on set. But he's like, oh, sorry, won't be back for 20 hours.
Yeah, but then he brings her with him. So, you know.
I don't know. Says,
you know,
not for that one. He wasn't there for Nomadland. He's like, go off with your friends and go to the desert and go in a bucket and win an Academy Award. I'll be over here with my brother writing a new movie.
She was doing that with someone else. That is a good film. That is a really good, you know.
It was all right.
It's
I know you liked it more than that. It was okay.
It's because
to me that was a horror movie.
It
watching Frances McDormand go in a bucket. I don't need to see that.
It's a film that answers a question about
Reminds me of like watching my mom on the can. I don't need to see it.
It's a film that answers a question about the American spirit that artists and writers and poets and everyone else has been asking for the last 100 years.
What is freedom?
Well, not so much what
crapping
is,
in your van.
Not so much what is freedom, but what happens to a restless expansionist nation when there's no place left to go.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me is what works about that film.
Yeah, it was okay.
Not a horror movie.
It was a little pretentious for me.
Not a horror movie, unless you consider Double Shifts at Wall Drug.
Yeah.
Horror, which...
yeah, she's there, like, scraping by on $5 an hour.
Yeah.
Like, polishing gems to sell at the road and stuff.
Living the dream.
Oh, my God.
That's what she wanted to do.
Yeah, but you know all those people are crazy. Most of them are crazy. They're hiding from something. Like, their families don't get along with them. They've murdered someone.
Their families don't get along. But that movie touched on that.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, I don't think, because keep in mind...
The sister did give her money. The sister did help her out.
Keep in mind that other than her,
yeah,
most of the cast in that movie were the actual people that are in the book.
Sure, yeah.
You know, which is one of the interesting things about it. They're not crazy. They're just not down for... They look at us and say, we're crazy. You know, you go home and watch television every night.
Like, well, I am crazy.
What are you doing that for?
Yeah, I think everybody's crazy. Yeah. It's just a matter of how you handle it. And some people don't handle it very well.
Well, it's like...
And then they go and crap in buckets in their van.
It's like I used to tell people, you know, back in my dating days, everybody's crazy. You just need to find somebody whose crazy is aligned with yours. And then you can be happy.
Find the right type of crazy.
Find the type of crazy that fits you best.
I go for the crazy that likes, like, you know, steak tips and chicken and pizzas and things like that.
Speaking of dating, October.
Crazy for that pizza.
Man, Halloween.
Let's talk about Halloween.
We got to talk about Halloween.
Yeah.
Greatest horror movie of all time?
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
it is a great horror movie. I don't know if it's my favorite horror
movie.
They're
going to find you buried.
But it's consistently good.
They're going to find you buried in a trunk.
It's consistently good.
With that song playing on loop.
Which one? Silver Shamrock?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
The first Halloween. Oh, man.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm figuring out where to go buy the trunk right now. Okay. Please. Oh, my God.
Nancy Allen.
It's so bad.
She's so good in it.
No one in that movie is good.
Even the lead. What was his name? It was Paul something, right?
Nothing in that movie is good. It is one of the worst.
Season of the Witch.
One of the worst movies ever made.
So good.
Awful. Awful. Awful.
Do you think it's one of the worst Tom Atkins is who I'm thinking of. Do you think it's one of the worst horror movies?
I think it's one of the worst movies, period, that's ever been made.
It is pretty bad, because you're expecting Michael Myers, and all of a sudden we get this crazy crap. But I love it, because of this song, I love it.
This song drives me insane.
And the guy that makes the mask, and he starts talking about, like, witches and things like that, I'm like, what happened to Michael Myers? You know, I remember renting this, and we're like, what is going on? This has nothing to do with Michael Myers. And it was sold as part of the Halloween franchise, which made me so angry.
By the time you hear this song
for
the first time, you realize it's too late.
Yeah.
It's all by the time you realize what you're listening to, it's too late.
You're going to have it.
Over.
It's an earworm.
It has laid its eggs in your brain.
Yes.
And it will be with you for the rest of your life. And there is nothing that you can do to change that.
Yeah.
Someone is going to randomly play it, and your teeth are going to be on edge, and you're going to say, get me out of here. This song.
Yeah.
This song. Oh, my God, this song. From the same guy that gave us the Halloween theme. So.
Yeah. Did John Carpenter make this?
Did
he make the song? I don't think he did.
He made three.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, it's Tommy Lee Wallace is the director of three.
This was
but John Carpenter is an uncredited writer.
Yeah, he's more than an uncredited writer on it. Tommy Lee Wallace got the credit on this because they fired John Carpenter from the project.
Yeah.
Because the producers were sitting there saying, what the hell are you doing?
He did The Fog as well.
Probably because they heard this.
Fright Night Part 2.
The Fog is brilliant. But anyway, back to the first Halloween.
Yeah.
You have to turn this music off.
There it goes. I'm going to get you the Halloween 29. I'll give you the original theme, and you go ahead. And I'm going to give you the remix of the original theme.
I think
Halloween.
I think if you go to the normies and ask them, like, non-horror fans, what's the scariest movie ever made?
Yeah.
They're all going to come back with Halloween.
Pretty scary.
I think if you ask horror movie fans, what are the greatest horror movies of all time?
Halloween.
Sure. Pretty much anybody.
And Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Pretty much everybody's going to put Halloween in, like, their top five.
I would say so. See, see, The Exorcist and The Omen is still scary as hell to me.
Yeah, those two I think of right away. Those are up there. If you're really deep into horror, you know, there's other stuff out there that you're like, oh, Profondo Rosso.
Sure, or, if you want to get into that.
Dawn of the Dead, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But Halloween is going to be in anybody's top five horror movies of all time. And I mean anybody.
Yeah, and the fact that they call it Halloween.
Yeah.
Because originally it wasn't called that. It was called like The Babysitter Murders or something, right?
Dude, that was a working title of it.
Yeah.
The movie is that good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And
it is awesome.
The secret to that movie's success, ultimately, is women.
Love them.
Women are scared to death by Michael Myers.
Yeah, because, scared to death of me, too.
Because what is Michael Myers? Doesn't respect boundaries.
Right.
Shows up when you don't want him around.
Yeah.
Doesn't say a word.
Steals your laundry.
He is the ultimate terrible boyfriend.
Doesn't talk back to you. Doesn't listen.
He is every creepy guy who has looked at you like on a subway or standing on a street corner or whatever.
Doesn't respond when you speak to him.
No.
Yeah.
He's
what do you want for dinner, Michael? Nothing.
He doesn't communicate, does whatever he wants, shows up and expects you to know exactly what you're supposed to do for him.
Yeah.
Right?
Plus he's blonde.
Deborah Hill. And they talk about the screenplay and how Deborah Hill got, the characters of the teenage girls right and the voice, which is true.
Yes. Yeah, she rounded up all the girls and stuff.
But the other side of this is she is really writing a horror movie for women.
Yeah.
She's writing a horror movie that centers female fear of men. And it's a silent... And the whole movie, Halloween, is about one thing. And it's that guy touching you.
Ooh.
That's what the whole movie is about.
You think so?
The whole movie starts out with...
That guy?
With Jamie Lee Curtis on one end.
Yeah.
And
I want Jamie Lee Curtis to touch me.
Michael Myers, a couple states away. And they get closer and closer and closer and closer and closer and closer and closer.
Right, yes.
Until...
Like the first 30 minutes, nothing's happening.
Until he touches her.
Yeah.
Then Loomis shows up and shoots him.
Yeah,
That's the whole plot of that movie.
Who's really like the father figure.
The creepy guy.
Yeah.
Who can't express himself, who just stares at you all the time, doesn't respect boundaries, shows up when you don't want him around, has probably been institutionalized.
Think so? Oh, he was institutionalized.
No, but in the movie he has been. But for women watching this, you look at Michael Myers and it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's every terrible boyfriend I ever had.
Well,
that's every guy that ever freaked me out.
Yeah, I guess.
Whereas you look at Freddy Krueger or Jason, those are clearly like male revenge fantasies.
All right. All right.
So, this is what sets the first Halloween apart. And
but isn't he like the brother of
No, we don't know any of that in the first film.
No?
We don't know any of that.
Well, okay, right. Yeah, he comes back.
He kills his sister.
He's gone off to some institution.
He's institutionalized.
Loomis recognizes him as evil.
By the way, if you want to talk about how to put together a great, great horror sequence.
Yes.
With no money.
Yes.
That scene where we first see Michael Myers, where he steals the car.
Oh, I love it.
Is brilliant.
Yeah.
If you want to understand how to make a scary movie, break that scene down shot by shot.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself how much it cost them to do that. Because
they had next to no budget.
He probably spent $2,000 making that.
Said $300,000 budget.
Yeah.
And it made $60, $70 million.
It's shot on a dark road in the middle of the night with a fence and a sign that says Haddonfield Mental Hospital.
Right. Just people wandering around.
And a few guys walking around in hospital johnnies.
Oh, I heard Dr. Sam Loomis was like, Donald Pleasance was loaded during that scene, too. He said he was really drunk.
I can believe
drank
that.
Drank a lot of wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
didn't want to be there.
He didn't want to be there.
But he came back for two for the paycheck.
Well, he needed the money.
Yeah.
He came back for a bunch of them for the paycheck.
Because so he can buy more wine.
No one else would hire him.
Yeah.
Because he liked the wine.
Yeah. He was a good James Bond villain, too.
He was.
Probably one of my favorite horror movie heroes. Other than Jamie Lee Curtis, there's two of them. Sam Loomis. Both of them.
Yeah.
Great Halloween heroes. Two of my favorites.
But he's almost incidental
to the whole film.
Oh, I think he's great.
You know, he's,
every scene is, and every scene he brings such intensity, and he's it's almost a joke.
Yeah,
you know, like the things that he says that comes out of his mouth, and you could see why he was drinking. He's like, "What are they having me say?" Because what he's saying really has no substance to it. We haven't seen why this man is so evil that he's going after.
He's
you
there.
You almost think he's crazy.
He's there to deliver exposition, and he does. Yeah. He comes off as crazy through the whole thing.
Yeah,
and that's part of what works.
But we also know that he's the voice of reason too. He's crazy, but he also has been the only person who knows how to deal with this evil.
Well, he's not crazy, but what he's saying is so impassioned and so off the rails that everybody just assumes that he's crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of a self-defeating character. Almost no blood in this film.
Right. I heard there's no blood in it. There's one point where he does get the stick in the neck, the needle in the neck. But she gets a little tear on her arm
when she finds
is there actual blood there
when she finds the bodies have the body the dead friends reveal scene
dead friends
there's a little bit of gore in that scene for the most part this is pre Tom Savini we're not blowing up heads and slashing throats and all the rest of that. It is a largely bloodless film and one of the most effective horror movies ever made.
Right.
Hands down.
Yeah, I agree.
If you like gore, if you hate gore, if you like horror, if you hate horror, whatever, this movie is scary.
I'd say just if you're a fan of movies in general, this is a movie to watch, whether you like horror or not.
Yeah.
It's a movie to watch because it made such an impact. And it just, for film history, it's one of the most important movies that was ever made.
Now the next one is...
Number two,
for my money, still good. It's the only true slasher movie.
Yeah.
It's the only true 80s slasher movie out of the Halloween films.
Yeah.
Because after two, we get that god-awful embarrassment of...
Oh, I love it. Silver Shamrock?
Of Season of the Witch. And then we come back to Michael, and we're making sort of supernatural gore movies.
Yeah, I don't remember much after those... Like fours and fives. There's Curse of Michael Myers is like five.
Four, five,
H2O. I never saw.
Four, five, and
with
six.
With LL Cool J.
All sort of blur together.
Yeah.
And the problem
is like Michael's Sad is like number seven.
You know what the problem is? When you start explaining what Michael Myers is, and you start, and this is a problem with every prequel, every sequel.
Sure. Yeah. The more you notice, like with Book of Boba Fett, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Boba Fett's mysterious.
We didn't
need the whole episodes about Book of Boba Fett. Come on.
Did you need to see Boba Fett become a mid-level bureaucrat?
Blob. Yeah, no. Like, and this big fat blob that wants to basically stay in Tatooine
for
his retirement? Yeah, give me a break.
Like I have to go look out for the people. No, you don't.
Yeah.
You're Boba Fett. Yeah. You have to do two things.
Kill things.
Number one.
Make money.
Number one, you got to go get your revenge on whoever built that rocket pack for you.
Go get old Han Solo. Go get him.
Because that rocket pack didn't work out too well.
Yeah.
No, because, the problem is the rocket pack, not Han Solo. Number two, you go find yourself a beach.
Yeah.
And drink all the Arcturian ale you can down and get yourself some Twi'lek girlfriends.
Yes.
That's what you do if you're Boba Fett. You don't go become like the mayor of Mos Eisley.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Stupid.
And they had the girl like Fennec Shand like do all the great killing in it.
Yeah, and it's like
Boba Fett gets some killing in. We don't need to see him on a Rancor. Who cares?
Couldn't she be like making money doing that somewhere?
Or
she's
making
really
out
good.
With Boba Fett because you know they do.
Yeah,
like she's with him.
Like what?
She's with him for a few episodes. They're out there in the desert for weeks. They're gonna get a little sugar, you know.
Why do you do that? Why do you have to explain? Don't explain the character. Yeah. And if you do explain the character, have the character go do something cool. Not be like, I'm going to be mayor now. Like, what is that?
Yeah, it made no sense.
You know?
Yeah.
They couldn't do that with Michael Myers because he doesn't talk, so he can't run for office.
We need like a Star Wars horror movie. I don't know. They've gotten horrible.
What, Rise of Skywalker wasn't horrifying enough for you?
They've gotten horrible. Andor's been all right, just as an aside. Number four... But number three was great. I could see why they did episode 1, 2, and 3. Whoever made that decision made the right one.
Yeah.
We're not going to show just 1 and 2. 1 was like set up. 2 was like a blink and it's over. And then 3, yeah, that was cool. Seeing like an engine flying around scene. That was pretty cool.
So Halloween 2.
Yes.
Is interesting because Halloween 1 is just the pure terror of like... One of the reasons that movie works is because it could be real. You know? There isn't any supernatural to it. There isn't any goofiness in it. It's like this guy's coming back and he's killing babysitters. It's like
in Halloween 2?
Yeah. And
in 1 and 2.
In 1.
Yeah.
All the parents are gone for whatever reason. Like nobody knows where the adults are, but all the adults are gone. They're all getting drunk down at the town rec center, or there's a beer garden downtown, or who knows what it is.
Yeah.
Halloween 2 just leans into all the slasher stuff.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff in it, too. Like, cars are flying and bursting into flames, like, just as an aside.
It has...
like, what is going on?
This is the thing.
Doesn't enhance the plot in any way. It's just a scare.
It has a... Yeah. And it's sort of there to just throw, like, slasher tropes at you the whole time. You know, it's like, oh, a girl takes her top off. Of course she does. And then Michael comes along and kills her, because of course he does.
Yeah.
There is a great setup at the end of it where you've got Jamie Lee Curtis, Laurie Strode, sedated and doped up.
Yeah, she's wandering around from the hospital like a few hours after the first movie. What's an interesting thing about the sequel, too. It's set a few hours after the first movie.
And Michael is coming after her.
Yeah.
And she can't run away from him.
Right, because she's all doped up.
She can't overpower him, so she has to figure out some way of outsmarting him in an unfamiliar environment.
Yeah.
That's a great horror setup right there.
Yeah. I like number 2. I would give it a thumbs up to watch. Would you recommend people see number 2?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like number 2 too.
And just to amp it up a little bit, we're going to set the hospital on fire.
Yeah.
Now, let me bring up the fact that I think Haddonfield is one of these low property tax communities, because the hospital is on fire and nobody shows up.
Yeah.
Like there's no fire department. There's no police.
Yeah.
Like, the hospital is on fire, and no one has come to so much as investigate this.
Right, right.
Except for Dr. Loomis.
Yeah.
Like, what? Haddonfield has the worst first responders in Hollywood history. Yeah.
Not to be confused with Hadaway, with the What Is Love song, right? Wasn't Hadaway? Haddonfield is a township in New Jersey.
What is this?
Yeah.
Like, we understand that the cops are, the cops in the first one can't find, like, a 6'6" guy.
Right.
Wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Like, walking around. They know what the stolen car looks like. They can't find that either. There's, like, 3 guys on the police force.
Yeah. And you know all 3 are going to die.
Yeah. So I could kind of give a pass on that. But when the hospital's on fire, I'm expecting, like, some first responders might come by.
Yeah. There's at one point, and I remember this scared the hell out of me, and I rewatched this a couple of years ago, and it was just like one of those afternoon things, just sitting in a hotel room, and I'm like, oh, the Halloween 2's on.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where, like, 2 characters, I think the doctor and, like, one of the cops are talking to one another, and they just, like, walking away, and all of a sudden, this car comes out of nowhere, and it completely bursts into flames for no apparent reason other than the fact that Michael is on the loose and people are worried.
Well, by the second film, like, the general public freakout is happening.
Yeah.
And somebody, like, drives the car into Michael, and then it flips over.
Yes, yes.
But you know who that guy was?
No.
This is a great bit of trivia in this.
Yeah.
Who's the guy that...
There was never the same Michael in every movie. I know that.
Who's the guy that Laurie Strode has a crush on in the first film?
Oh, I don't remember.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Somebody from
high school, right?
Right.
She mentions with her girlfriends in the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, God, what's his name?
It's supposed to be that boyfriend that she liked in the first one, and he's driving the car?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So the guy that she has the crush on in the first film, who her girlfriend says, I called him up and told him, hey, he'd like to go out with you. He's the one that gets killed.
That's right.
By the flaming car in the second one.
No kidding. Interesting.
And it's a fun little callback. The great thing about Halloween 2 is that it knows it's silly. It leans into its silliness.
Yeah.
But it kind of does that to its own disadvantage, because that setup at the end with Laurie and Michael is so good.
Yeah.
That it's one of those things that you kind of want to see somebody make a movie out of.
Yeah. So it spawned 7 sequels, Halloween.
Yeah.
But, 2 was pretty much the only memorable one. And, of course, 3. It's memorable to me because of that song and because it was just like, what is this?
Well, you know what?
The Rob Zombie ones were crazy. Did you see those?
I like the...
They were too much for me. It was literally like MTV, like heavily edited, just like how intense can you get? I mean, everything was intense for like 90 minutes.
It was
so intense.
It was Halloween
like,
for Juggalos.
Oh my God.
It was Halloween for Juggalos.
If you're
a fan of Insane Clown Posse, you love the Rob
sure,
Zombie
okay.
Halloween movies.
All right.
But it's also like heavy metal Halloween. You know, that's Rob Zombie. That's what he does.
Yeah.
His films dial everything up to like 10,000.
But still, 90 minutes of it? I mean, come on. I can maybe, you know, do 10 minutes of it.
Either you're on board.
It was like Natural Born Killers to me.
It's The Devil's Rejects is like that. And
yeah.
House of a Thousand Corpses is like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, either you really like it or... It burns itself out very, very quickly.
Yeah, like I watched the two of them just to watch them once, and I was like, "Yeah, not really."
Yeah,
and these, oh my God, the ones that have come out recently. The first one just awful. I didn't see Halloween Kills, and Halloween Ends comes out next week, but the remake of Halloween where Jamie Lee Curtis is basically Lyndall Hamilton from Terminator 2, where she's gone insane and just prepared her entire adult life for Michael to come back on Halloween, and he finally does, and he's gonna go after her daughter and her daughter's daughter, and three generations of women are going up against this oppressive male, you know, like you were saying in the first movie, like the scare of, you know, this man that's just going to touch them in some way.
Just can't stop the patriarchy.
Yeah, and it's nuts. And they, like, you know, they burn him alive and they just do all these, you know, completely over the top things. Oh, I have to mention at one point in Candyman, too. The person, one of the people dies, and the woman kills him and stabs him at least 150 times. And the one line is I think he's dead. And I'm like, oh my God. It was like so gratuitous. It was like, come on. You know, it was just absolutely ridiculous, and it didn't seem to fit in the movie. But these Halloween ones, like the latest one that was the remake, I'm like, eh. And I thought that was going to be good, but I completely don't recommend that. So I didn't see Halloween Kills, and I'm not going to see Halloween Ends, at least not this year.
Ben Tramer.
Who's that?
He's the one that they think is Michael.
Ben. Oh, I got you.
And
I
he goes you. Running out you. Into the street and yep. gets hit by a car.
Right.
And the car bursts into flames, mm-hmm. and Ben is dead. And there's a line... I forget who says it, but somebody says, oh my God, Ben Tramer. And if you know that from the first movie,
right,
you get the callback.
Yeah. Now they know.
Yep. Great movie. The first two are great. H2O is great. I love
H2O. Yeah, I gotta see H2O. I still haven't seen it. That's the one with Cool J in it too, right?
It's got LL Cool J in it. It gets a little hinky in the middle because I think it's a Joss Whedon joint.
Oh yeah,
and it's trying to lean into
like
that
Firefly, right?
Yeah, but it also did Buffy.
Oh,
so it's leaning into that teenage ensemble cast thing where you got a bunch of kids because it's set at a prep school.
Yeah,
Lori is teaching at a prep school now, and her son goes to the prep school.
Yeah.
Adam Arkin. Is the headmaster of the prep school and yep. also Laurie's boyfriend.
Okay.
And he's great in everything. So
Janet Leigh's in it too. That's
Janet
Leigh
is in it for like a hot minute at the start of the film.
Oh yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Robin himself.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people, you look at the cast, you're like, wow, it's a lot of the kids in this went on to big things.
Yeah.
It gets into a point in the middle of it where it's like kids against killer running around and being goofy and kind of more Nightmare on Elm Street than you probably want it to be.
Yeah.
But overall, it plays well, and it continues the story well.
Yeah.
And it was the first attempt to sort of reboot Jamie Lee Curtis into the series. They killed her off very early on in the one that followed it, which was a terrible movie. It was basically about the internet and live streaming Halloween and live streaming Michael Myers. Bad meta film. It was basically leaning very heavily into Scream, which is not territory that Halloween needed to explore.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
I love the Halloween 1 and 2, though. I always watch Halloween almost every year.
I do
have to say that. I do watch it every year, so yeah. It is one of my favorite movies.
Halloween night, I watch it every year. Yeah. After the trick-or-treating is done, Halloween goes in.
And Halloween 2 wasn't easy to find, either. It wasn't really available other than on VHS. I never really saw it for years.
So the good news is that Shout Factory got the rights to all of the Halloween films.
Oh, yeah?
And last year, they put out Halloween 1, 2, 3, and 4. Yes,
I did buy number one.
Yeah. On 4K.
They had three, too? Wow.
They're all excellent.
Yeah.
The first Halloween 1 has come in for a bit of criticism because Dean Cundey, who was the cinematographer of the film. Dean Cundey.
Uh-huh.
Also worked on a little movie called Back to the Future.
Oh, nice.
I think you like.
Yeah.
Dean Cundey changed the color timing for Halloween.
Oh, yes. We talked about this. Me and you did.
And a lot of people were not happy with that.
Right.
And I understand where that comes from. I believe what was done with an eye toward what he may personally have wanted the film to look like.
Yeah.
Rather than what the film actually looked like.
But it also took away from a couple of the good scares in the movie, especially the closet scene.
So, as a concession to apparently anticipating this controversy, Shout Factory did include the original color timing on the film on the Blu-ray disc that's included.
Yeah.
So you get both versions, but the 4K, it didn't really bother me that much.
Yeah.
I think it looks a little too clean and a little too modern compared to, you know, sort of my memory. And the thing about it is, if you're our age.
Yeah.
And you grew up with these films and you've seen these films a million times, they're bound up in a certain look and feel that is the 1980s VHS experience.
Sure.
Where all the blacks are sort of crushed out and there isn't a lot of dynamic range and everything's a little grainy and jaggy and all the rest of that. The more those films look like that memory, the happier we are with them.
Yeah.
And when you try and make them look modern and new, we get unhappy with them because we're like, what? You ruined the movie.
Right.
You know, like, stop putting your filters on it and stop doing this. And Dean Cundey's sitting there like, this is what the movie was supposed to look like. And we're like, we don't care if you shot the movie. We don't care if you're Dean Cundey. Make it look the way we want it to look. And it's like,
we don't care that you're Dean Cundey.
Who's right in that situation?
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, I have to tell you, I saw Old. And out of the three movies I mentioned, Antlers and Candyman remake and Old is great.
Yeah.
It's more of a thriller. It does have some very horrific moments in it. But it's M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong there who did Sixth Sense. Great, great horror movie. At least I think it's a great horror movie. What do you think about that one, Sixth Sense?
Sixth Sense is good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie that you can only see once.
I don't agree.
It's a movie you can only see once.
No, viewing. It's neat seeing what was there you may have missed.
This is but that's the same trick that Jacob's Ladder used. You know, story wise, there's no reason to ever see the movie more than once.
Oh, I like Jacob's Ladder too.
I think Glass is the best movie that he ever made.
Glass is great.
Not Glass. Yeah. Unbreakable.
Ass.
I think Unbreakable is the best movie he ever made.
Yeah, Unbreakable's fantastic.
Because there's a thing going on in that movie that you don't realize.
Yeah.
And then once you know that it's there, you want to go see it again. Whereas with The Sixth Sense, it's sort of like, okay, this is...
Oh, I love it.
You know, oh, here's twist ending, and he does that.
Yeah, but that was really his first twist ending. And this one's got a twist, and here's the only problem I had with it. The twist goes a little too long, but it also kind of, you know, it's a Hollywood movie. They got to have a... kind of a feel-good ending in it, so there is there, and it seems like it's tacked on an extra 20 minutes that it doesn't need to be. But Old is very good.
It's not the trees killing everybody again, is it?
No, it is very good. I really enjoyed it. I think people should go see this one.
I'm still angry about that movie.
He's hit and miss. What was that one that he did with the lady running under the stairs, too? That one's great. It had, like, the grandmother under the stairs and stuff. Like, M. Night, he has, the kids go over and they babysit or something like that. But it was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. That's a really good one, too.
Oh, I honestly haven't seen any of his recent stuff because I am still angry about The Happening.
That was okay. I mean, nothing special.
I'm still angry about it.
Yeah.
That movie.
I gotta tell you. I gotta find it. What it is.
That movie made me angry, and I've been angry about it ever since.
Yeah. The Happening. Avatar, The Last Airbender, After Earth.
It was The Trees.
The Trees? The Visit. It was The Visit. When they go visit their grandmother. Did you see that one?
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, yeah. That one's good. Yeah. Split wasn't that great.
The one with the aliens wasn't bad.
Bad ending. But yeah, the one with Mel Gibson.
But up to that point.
He's good. I like this guy.
He's
M. Night. Shamalama Ding Dong.
Like, technically, he's good.
And he's handsome. He's a good looking guy. Good looking Indian man.
Stories are god awful.
No, I don't agree. I think he's good. I think it opens up a lot about getting old. He's 52 years old. So he's middle age. And he started to see things happen with his parents, as people do. And he's like, okay, so we're the adults now. We have to take care of the parents. So he wrote a story about that and around COVID and stuff. And it's really good. I thought there was a lot of things. He doesn't, there's only so much you can say in, you know, 90-100 minutes. It's great. I thought it was a great movie. I loved it.
Is an amusement park used allegorically at any point during this film?
No.
George Romero did it better.
Maybe. Probably. I haven't seen the amusement park yet, but I'm suggesting this week, out of those three movies that I saw, go see Old. It's good. I think you'll like it, Derek. I think you'll be surprised.
I am more intrigued.
Because M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong sometimes disappoints me, but he's back and he's better than ever.
I'm more intrigued by the super woke Candyman
remake. Says Chris Earl, WMFO. It's awful.
Well, you know, but
I know you're going to see it. It's awful.
Yeah.
You're going to see it and you're going to get angry. I wasn't angry. I was just annoyed. More annoyed than anything.
I got to finish.
I'm like, this movie's annoying me. No.
I got to finish watching some super, super lurid Lucio Fulci first.
Yeah.
Because I'm on the New York Ripper. A little preview of this week's Friday Night Frights.
All right.
That is one of your more disturbing sexually charged giallos.
Ooh.
From Fulci's New York period. And there is crazy stuff going on in this movie.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. Crazier than a butt pumpkin.
Crazier than a butt pumpkin.
I can't imagine what Lucio Fulci would have done if he'd had access to a butt pumpkin.
Mm.
I really can't.
Hey, let's play this or that real quick. We only got a couple minutes left. Are you ready? This or that. Here we go. Let's see. I'm going to give you something. Let me think. Let me give it some thought here. This or that, as we know, is bad. Two bad situations. You pick which one, and then you tell me how you're going to survive it. I'm going to give you... all right, this week you're on a camping trip, and you're stuck in a sleeping bag, and there's a serial killer that's in the neighborhood, and the zipper won't come down in the sleeping bag. Or you are at a stadium event, and somebody comes up, throws your best friend off the top of the stadium, and they're coming for you. Which one do you choose?
I'm taking the stadium.
You're going to take the stadium,
I'm absolutely
right.
Taking the stadium, because as soon as somebody gets thrown over the edge,
yes,
you know what the next thing that happens in the movie is.
All right.
Everybody freaks out,
yep,
gets in between me and the serial killer,
uh-huh,
and I get away.
All right.
So I can at least get further down in the stadium,
yep,
where I might be able to avail myself of a friolator, or some long pointy forks being used to make hot dogs.
Yes.
And I can then eliminate the serial killer.
Very good.
Preferably with the friolator, because like, you know, bubbling somebody's skin off is always like the best way to get your revenge.
Ooh, we have to talk about next week. I want to talk about those best horror weapons, like a sleeping bag is one of the ones you mentioned, and also that needle, the sewing needle in Halloween is a great horror weapon. Let's do that next week.
You posted the sleeping bag with, of course, the
Jason 9,
the picture from, that's Jason X, actually.
Is it Jason X? Is the space one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because he puts the girls in the sleeping bag, and then he's banging them against the tree on the holodeck of the ship. It's hilarious. Like that moment.
At that point, they were looking for horror fans that wanted to see something a little different. And a sleeping bag against the tree is it.
Yeah.
It was inventive. They got inventive with the ways that he kills people.
The great thing about Jason X, that scene in Jason X, is like the whole movie is like Jason in space.
Mm-hmm.
And then to try and capture Jason, they throw in like this homage to the original Friday the 13th movies where he thinks he's in a summer camp.
Yes.
And it's basically every great joke that you could write about that, like, collapsed into 3 minutes of cinema.
Yeah.
And if you could just pull that piece of the movie out and watch it, that's really all you need to see.
Have you seen all the Friday the 13th? I think I have.
Yes.
Yeah. And they do have their merits. Each one of them has their merits.
Including the remake done by Blumhouse.
And even Jason Takes Manhattan. The part when he does the boxing scene and he knocks that guy's head off, it was just crazy.
Jason Takes Manhattan, if you skip over the first, like, I believe it's a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
You want to skip over, like, the first 65 minutes of that.
Yeah.
Because
he's only in Manhattan, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, because it's a bunch of teenagers partying on a ship, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
They're, like, on a boat that somehow goes from, like, the middle of the woods in Camp Crystal Lake to Manhattan.
Right.
Like, where is this? Where is this? How is any of this happening?
We got to roll. Real Horror Show. Chris Earl, Derek Gary. We will be back next week. Thanks for listening to your freeform station. It's WMFO in Medford. Stick around, everyone.